Welcome to the 29th Annual Executive War College brought to you by The Dark Report. This year's conference was in beautiful New Orleans, April 30th through May 1st. The title of this presentation is A Winning Use Case for Digital Pathology. The presenter is Esther Abels, CEO, Solaris RTC LLC, Boston, Massachusetts.
All right, welcome everybody in this hot, exotic room. I was just saying it's the perfect storm, right? Sitting here in a hot room after lunch. So I try to keep you awake with regards to digital pathology. And what I would like to talk about today is about, are we going there with a big bang, or is it just like a big toe dip in water? And how I'm going to do that is first tell you a little bit like where we are today with regards to digital pathology, what happens, what is needed to implement digital pathology from a lab perspective on a high level, then go through what is needed for AI, but that's mostly focused more on the industry level because we're waiting for that really to happen, but it's getting there. Some ideas about what is it going to cost. I'm not going to give you estimates, but I'm going to give you some tools how to calculate it. And then as last, there's a benchmark requirements where I see what we need to get the big bang. So yeah, the big bang or a toe in the water. Well, I first would like to start with what I see right now. It's happening. It's changing. We're here. We're getting digital pathology more and more used. It's in clinical, it's in research, it's in pharma. It's getting more and more commonized everywhere. Same as with the phones, right? There was a phone already back in 1973, and it took about 10 years to get that commercial available for the public. It took another 20 years to really take off globally, to really be a mobile phone. So why did that happen at that moment? The 3G standard came in. So standardization is key with digital tools that we're going to use with digitization. Same with the cameras. So it's nothing compared to a scanner, but if you look at the cameras, they were already invented in 1816. Then in 1975, it was already the first digital camera. And now they're becoming smaller and smaller. And there's a lot of innovation going on. And you don't see that happening with the cameras itself, but it's more what is inside the camera, like color standardization. Lenses are being standardized. So the smaller the camera doesn't mean like there's better or worse image quality. It's how we can implement standardization to optimize those tools that we're using in daily practice. Same with radiology. The timelines for radiology, it started in 2004 when the FDA had a meeting about interoperability, and they really wanted to have radiology to get this big lift to start it, to digitize it, because before that was all on film. And then when it happened, it really only took off in 2012 when there was this summit where they agreed like, okay, we need, they had like seven pairing teams, but the most important one is the number one, I would say, that's where we have standardization. When we start to standardize, we really can take it off. And also with regards to streamlining the clinical workflow, so less variety. And that helps us to implement things here, there, so once you've done it somewhere, you can copy it anywhere else, right? That's the idea. So looking now at digital pathology, where did we start? Where are we now? Well, digital pathology took off in 2000 when the first whole slide imaging devices were commercially available. Before that, we already hit digital pathology, but it really started in 2009. And then in 2009, it was an FDA advisory panel. And I don't know, I see Eric sitting here. I don't know whether you were there as well, Eric, part of that. No, those discussions. Yeah. But I think there was a foundation there at that meeting where we really were discussing together with the clinicians as well as the FDA, talking about what is digital pathology, how can we get this to the field. And initially, as you all might know, the FDA regarded this as the highest risk class device, a class 3 device, but we got it reclassified to a class 2 device in 2017. But what happened before that we got the TPA guidelines released. And again, that's a kind of a general principle, a general approach. How can we use all the technology in a certain way that everybody can reuse it and get it into the market? In 2021, so 4 years after the Holston image got approved, we got the FDA clearance for an AI algorithm. Now, 3 years down the road, that's still the only one that's there. So why is that? And we're going to into those details a little bit more. Before we go into that, I want to highlight there was a survey that was done by, I think it was Professor Fukuoka from Japan, and he did that globally. And what he found is that he interviewed 127 centers, and he found that 53% of the Asian clinical labs and also 42% of the European clinical labs, they already implement and are fully digital. FDA is keeping us a little bit behind. We're at 10% only. And I'm saying FDA, and why is that? I come back to that later, but it's again about interoperability. How do we work? How do we get all the algorithms? How do we get scanners with viewers and everything combined? So, and yeah, if you're not really familiar with digital pathology, we, of course, what the FDA is looking at is that you have a scanner, a viewer, and a display, and that all works together. And you cannot separate it from industry perspective. From user perspective, you can, and then you validate it in your own lab. But from FDA perspective, you cannot. You have to always get that across the FDA as a total solution. So that's important to know. So that's why I think we're a little bit behind in the U.S. in implementing things. Only 10%. And also, I believe it was mentioned yesterday during, I think it was Tim Stenzel said it, he's the ex-FDA, he said, we want to be the driving country, we want to be the innovative country, and we want to stay ahead of the curve. And I think digital pathology is behind the curve. So how can we speed that up? We need to do something there, right? So we need to be, first of all, we need to be comfortable in using it. And when we look at it, the science talks, right? Because there has been so many publications already out there. There's one publication, the reference is here, and I know the slides will be shared because it's very small font. But that shows that digital pathology is already used in many labs, and that only 355 cases out of 8,000, more than 8,000, are discordant. So there's not that many. It's only 4%. And if you look into the details, it's explained why. And I do believe with adding algorithms there, we can even reduce that number. So we have to have confidence in that. Then there's a lot of arguments like, why should we implement it and why not? And I think the benefits are clear to all of us. Optimization, decentralization, we can get AI on it, we can get more efficient, more effective, etc. But there's so many why nots. And I'm sorry to say, but I see the why nots more as excuses. It's not really like, oh, it's a barrier or a roadblock that we have to overcome. No, it's a good excuse to not do something. Because, oh, it's cybersecurity. Oh, we need to do a lot with IT. Oh, the regulatory paths are difficult. We can all overcome it. We know how to do it. We just have to do it. And we have to do that together. Because, by the way, going back one thing, that's one of the biggest arguments as well. Like, there's a lot of investment. It costs a lot. But actually, who pays the price ultimately? It's the patient. Because I do believe with digital pathology, we could have prevented all this. And I highlight two of them. So one of them is a former VA doctor who missed diagnosis, but also had misdiagnosis, about 10% of his cases. And it's really sad because he was under influence. Right? It can happen, but not with patients. It should not happen. It should have been prevented. An algorithm could have prevented that, could have triggered something like, hey, this pathologist is off compared to others with his errors. In this picture, that is from an article that was published in 2022 in October, and it showed that 30% of the patients are getting only the precision medicine that they're supposed to get. 60% is not. 60% of the patients is not getting access to treatment. And that's saddening to me, because a lot of things happening in this entire process of the lab process, of the lab medicine, also with the healthcare provider, the oncologist, whomever, they order tests, they order the wrong tests, then the tissue is insufficient to do the next test. If you look through the article, there are like all these steps where something goes wrong, and we could have prevented that. That's my opinion, my personal opinion, but when I look into it, we could have prevented that with digital pathology. Because a lot of things are on quality control. A lot of things are on, if you do this test, you don't have to do that test. Or if you see this in this test, order straight away a retest or an additional test. And that could have done easily. So I would like to ask you all, if you have your phone with you, I know Wi-Fi is not that great, but I hope you can scan it. I don't know if it's going to work. But then I have a poll. Let's see, I have to go. Oh, sorry. Is it still possible or not? Yeah, it's working. Yep, it's working. Will AI be used to optimize profitability or to improve outcomes? Great. Yeah. I'm happy to see this, that we all believe that it helps improve outcomes. Thank you. All right, let's go back to the presentation. I also believe it will help improve outcomes, but I also believe it can be used to optimize profitability. And I also believe that we should be using it in that way, because if we're using it in that way, it will be implemented sooner and patients will get access to it sooner as well. So I think it will be both. I know this was a multiple choice question, so you can answer both of them. I did that deliberately, but that's what I think. And I see now that this doesn't really reflect well on this screen, but opportunities for using digital pathology are all here. And I think it has really three aspects, three angles. So if we look at it, really look into improving the pre-analytical workflow. For example, we can do a lot with AI already by identifying, is the fixation right? Is the can we reduce downtime of certain systems? How can we do that? So AI will pick that up earlier and we can do something about it. This morning I was really pleased to see a presentation by Nottingham in the UK. They have used Lean Sigma to improve digital pathology and the entire workflow and reduce variability. And it showed that they have 10 to 15% reduction in, increased efficiency, I have to say. So I was very pleased to see that because they said it takes about half a day extra when you implement digital pathology to go through the cases and make them fit for using digital pathology. But overall, they had 10 to 15% efficiency gain. So I think we can do that with the pre-analytics. We can do that also using algorithms to improve accuracy and precision. We can start predicting. We can say which patient will respond to a treatment. We can better assess the prognosis. Is this patient at risk? What kind of risk? Do they need a surgery? Do they then need a treatment follow-up, yes or no? That's all possible with digital pathology. But of course, we need to have the technology, and that needs to be unlocked. And that will be unlocked when we start using it. And then we can even do more with it. We can start using features that cannot be seen with the human eye. And we can start identifying that with AI. And of course, the human still needs to be in the loop because there's ethics involved. We need to make sure that the AI is not going crazy. We need to make sure that the input is right, and that's where we still need to be involved and help them making that decision. But I believe that that will lead to improved patient management. So what is then needed when you're in a lab? What do you need to do to implement digital pathology? And this is very simple, an oversimplified schematic. But as said, it's a scanner, and then you have a viewing, and then you have a display, and then you have the pathologist. But we also have, of course, the slides over here. We have your laboratory information systems. We have an archive. We have a PEC system. But this is symptomatic scheme. But thinking about the LDT rule that's coming up, that's already there, actually, 3 days ago. This is what you need to go through if you're thinking, oh, I want to buy a scanner that's not cleared by an FDA. I want to buy an image management system that's not cleared by an FDA. I want to get an algorithm that's not cleared by an FDA. If you believe that you can put that in your lab and then start using that for your patients, you have to go through an FDA showing that it all works together, this entire pixel pathway. And even, by the way, the display itself. This is then with regards to IT, and we had permission from Eric, who presented this at Pathology Visions in October. And I think this was really a nice schematic and also a great example if you're thinking about implementing digital pathology, who to involve in your lab and who to involve from your entire hospital system, because I believe that IT is such an important and crucial part of it. All the interoperability, all the linkages that you need to make sure that happen, that there's no patient mix-up and those kind of things, storage, controlling that, your IT persons need to be involved in this. I think this was really helpful to see that you can, you know, start at a high scheme, high level, how to do this, and who is all involved, who get control what. This is all there. This is also kind of a governance structure that you can see. So what else? If you're then comparing it to radiology, is it that simple? Because we think, okay, we now have this IMS system, we have this cockpit for the pathologist. Should we do the simple approach as we did, and not under, don't want to give the impression that radiology was simple, but I just want to say it was easier to implement than it is with pathology. Because with radiology, we got rid of film, then digital took over. And with digital pathology, we have so much more. We have all these different colors. We need to zoom in and zoom out with all the different pixelations, all the different features that need to be get there. But also, each kind of personalized medicine needs their personalized workflow. So if you think about, and that's why I have like an airplane, and then in the middle is a cockpit, and then the pilot. So for each time with heme or, for example, with bone, you have a different workflow in pathology. So you can have the same plane, but you cannot have the same cockpit for heme or for bone. So that all needs to be their own workflows and their own parts. And that's why it's so important that we think about digital pathology. What do you need? How do you need? When do you need to set it up? And there is synergies, of course, with DICOM and IT. The synergies somewhere with storage, but it's also fundamentally different because digital pathology has huge files, and also what do you store, both the glass slides, the part that you made the diagnosis of, all the images that you're going to scan, do you need to scan all images? Probably not. So all these questions are still there, and we need to answer them, and that's why I believe if we get some general principles and standardization, that will facilitate this. And also, the biggest difference between radiology and pathology is that no one has a disease until the pathologist says so. Right? It's the pathologist making the definitive diagnosis. The radiologist can still say, okay, maybe there's a suspicion for a lesion, maybe there's a suspicion for A, B, and C. So there are more differential diagnoses there. A pathologist gives the definitive diagnosis, and that's why digital pathology is different, has a different setup. And that's a lot. That's a lot. And it will cost a lot. So will it be reimbursed? The good news is that when you have coding, there might be some reimbursements, there might be coverage, there might be payment. But when you get a code, you do not necessarily get paid. And we all know that. But so for digital pathology, the latest is that we have 43 Category 3 codes right now, CPT codes. And I think the CPT codes are great because, you know, they're generic, we can use them. But if you then look at it going into the detail, it's really those are add-on codes. And add-on codes are not great because they're only specific to one case. You can only use it once. So having said that, it's piling up, it's stacking, it's not really taking everything into account what you need for digital pathology. Your pre-analytics will change, you have more histotechs working, who's doing the scanning, who's setting up the IT. So I'm not really happy with the CPT 3 codes, but it's better than nothing. It's the first step in the right direction. This is just a snapshot of what it is. What I think what we need to do to make it happen is getting earlier involvement of the payers. And that's something I'm very keen to work on. And also with the Digital Pathology Association, we're working on this, to getting more and earlier involvement with payers, identifying should we go for these CPT codes, should we go for PLA codes, what is the best approach. But also, I don't know if you're all aware of, but if you're thinking about going for a CPT code, there are parallel review paths with the Centers of Medicaid Services and Medicare that the FDA is working on. So there are parallel paths, and we've seen that once the device is cleared, that within 1 or 2 months later, you also have a CPT code. So I think that's very interesting to keep an eye out. And we're certainly working on that. If we're thinking about the CPT codes, the CPT category 1 code, so we now have 3, and that's really more to track. Where are we? What do we have? There's no reimbursement yet. There's nothing valued yet. So we need to go for a category 1. But doing a category 1, that's extremely hard, and the requirements are significant. So we need to gather a lot of data. And that's hence, coming back to my earlier statements, start early, start involving patients, start involving the users, do that very early onwards. So I got another poll to keep you awake with this heat. At least I find it very hot. Improve patient outcome. It's interesting to see that the first poll, we said, okay, we need to have improved, that is driving, but when it really drives the adoption, then it's, that is again, like reimbursement is higher than patient, but I like it, the efficiency in workflow, because I do believe we can work on that with standardization and pre-analytics a lot. Great. Thank you. Why I keep coming back on standardization, because I think if we take it very simplified approach again, we have digital pathology. You can break that down in 4 categories, in my opinion. If you're using it for clinical research, education, quality, whatever, you can always go back to these 4 categories. Like there's image acquisition, the storage, we need to process it, and then you need to visualize it. Maybe at a certain point in time, we even have algorithms or digital pathology where you don't need to visualize something. But when you're developing it, of course, you always have to visualize it. So what matter is truly is the image quality. So that's the key thing when we're going to have digital pathology. That is key. So we have to think about all these elements here, and that's also what the FDA focuses on. If you're, for example, running an algorithm, you might have a scanner that's doing a great job on a certain section thickness, but maybe your algorithm doesn't. So what is that range? How can you make sure that your algorithm captures everything? So I think that is where we need to pay attention to. So coming back to the AI, and as I mentioned, I would like to focus a little bit more on this part, actually, that there's a causality dilemma, in my opinion. There's a chicken and egg situation, because what we have is that we have all these tools, but we're not implementing them because it's expensive. But we cannot show the use case because no one really has implemented it. So we miss the data to optimize it and to create algorithms. So there's a kind of a dilemma, and how can we break that? And that's why I was really pleased to see that Nottingham showed that they had that 10 to 15% efficiency gain. But I also believe that what we see, that AI tools are currently being built, and I think there are great AI tools already out there. But what we see is that standardization and interoperability is lacking. So you cannot use, per se, one algorithm that fits for all the different scanners. I'm not saying you cannot, but it's we need to make some adaptations to that. We need to have access to large data sets. Regulatory approval is lacking, it's slow. So with that, again, the patients are not getting the timely access that we believe that patients should be getting. We're needing to serve the patients who we're supposed to serve. So coming to that, these are the issues with regards to data. It's inaccurate and unreliable, and you can read it for yourself, but this is what I believe what is happening at the moment, and that's also what you see happening with the government. They're really invested in this. I don't know whether you heard of it. There was a DARPA project for the defense, and now they also have the ARPA-H project for health initiatives. The ARPA-H is really investing also. Can we get a marketplace? Can we get a data commons? Can we get standardized data so that we can use that standardized data to drive and create algorithms that everybody has access to? Or if you're a algorithm company who wants to get an algorithm developed, you can use that data, but even go to that marketplace and say, okay, I run this algorithm on this data. This is sequestered data. We can reuse it. We get a report, we file it to the FDA, and the FDA only looks at the report and doesn't ask all the questions that you usually get. So I think that's a great step forward, and the FDA is investing in it, the government is investing in it. So I think that is what is one of the solutions that we're working at. So this is then also that need that I just explained to me, is have an accessible public data source. And with that, me as a person, together with Carl Barrett, he's from, he used to work at AstraZeneca. We met and we're both passionate to drive this, so we're doing this in our spare time. We're really focusing on democratizing digital pathology. We really want to get this accomplished so that patients will get access to the right treatment. And I'm also glad to inform that ARPA-H is interested in what we're thinking of and how to set it up. So we're driving this, and I'll come back to that later because I need your help too. So what does it cost? If you want to implement digital pathology, what does it cost? I actually would like to turn it around. I'd like to challenge you. Think about what are the gains. As mentioned, Nottingham had this great improvement. So, but before that, I think, of course, you need to know what does it cost, because you need to make a budget, you need to make a business plan and a business case and everything within your labs. So this is an ROI calculator. The Digital Pathology Association created this, and it's available on the website. Of course, you need to be a member to get access to it, but I think it's great because it's very detailed, it's very thorough, and you need to complete a lot of questions. Think about what's your IT architecture, case assembly, but I think it's great that all these questions are out there, because it will let you think, what do I need in my lab to make this happen? So that you can go with the big bang instead of like dipping a toe and then, you know, gradually getting there. That's fine too, but I think, you know, if you look at a few labs already implemented with the big bang and gained this efficiency. So this is a great calculator. This is a great tool to have and to use. Some other numbers that I would like to share, and I'm not going through everything, but what you see is that, for example, that 13.4% of the performing tests might be easier when automated with digital, because pathologists' recorded time is actually that 36% is actually reviewing slides, 34% is of time spent reporting. So I think there, you can see that there are a lot of things that that we could gain. So then with this one, this was an article that was published, and I really enjoyed reading that as well. And this should have been flying in, so I don't know, something went off with my presentation. My apologies about it. But with this publication, it saved... Yeah, I need to remove that because I think you need to see that. Those numbers are amazing. No, that doesn't work. There you go. So I'll blow it up again. So if you look at that, how much the estimation is, it was a publication of 2014, so be aware of that. But they looked at the cost savings when you implement digital pathology. It can be like 12.4 million. Improved diagnosis, that's something that's also to keep in mind. We will get better diagnosis when using it, and with that, the downstream costs will change, right? So there's a lot of changes there as well. Then, of course, the big thing that I just removed, we also need to be aware if we are getting a lot of efficiency gains. Pathologists are always concerned about, okay, I now have efficiency gains, then my CPT code reimbursement that I'm going to get might drop, because with the microscope, I need to have more time, so I got more value and I got more reimbursed. But honestly, do we then also need it as a pathologist? I'm looking at you, Eric, sorry. Honestly, as a pathologist, do we then also need that reimbursement? Because we're spending less time, right? So it's fair to say maybe you don't need it. I'm not promoting it. I don't have an opinion there, but I just think we need to look at it from all angles and all different perspectives. And be careful, like, because there's so many stakeholders and we all need to win, and we all want to win, because in the end, it's the patient that pays the price. So it leads me to the last part of this presentation, because I do believe when we're using digital pathology, there's a perfect situation to start standardizing everything in your labs. I'm not saying that you're not standardizing, but I think this gives more opportunity to have standardization. So this is another poll. And you just type in what comes up in your mind. What should we standardize to drive digital pathology? So if we don't standardize, what is then the impact? I also looked into some articles and literature. And I was really, to be honest, I was saddened when I read this. Like, the median interval from symptom onset to registration for medical consultation was 30 days. And it ranged from 0 to 730 days. And I heard it before, it was shared with pathologists with me before, that it could even take 3 years to get a final diagnosis. And that's sad if you're looking at it from a patient perspective, not knowing what's going on. And that's really terrible. Also here, like self-detection of breast cancer and then following up with physicians, how long does that take? So I think that's where we can improve. And it's often that we're always very busy to focus on what we're doing, but I think we have to take a step back and think about what can we do to optimize this? How can we do that? Well, and this is, thank you to Lamia helping with this presentation, the slides. So thank you for sharing. So what is digital pathology? And I think here are great steps where you can standardize and how you can standardize. And there are a lot of pre-analytical steps that you can use to standardize. And I am also very fond of what they did at Lumia regarding the prostate biopsy, how to handle the chip that they developed. That's something that we can definitely implement also in different aspects. Think about outside the box and how to implement that. But what it shows actually, so I want to go, by the way, I'll walk through this because I think we can better measure when we're having digital pathology. Instead of using that manual thing, we can now use digital rulers, the tissues based on glass slides. Usually you have all these different slides, putting all the blocks, losing tissue. Now we can also think about multiplexing. Glass slides are reviewed on a microscope. We now can have the histotech and also AI helping to say, okay, the case is ready for you to review and everything's there instead of waiting for one glass slide coming in, the other glass slide. I didn't receive the quality check, quality control slide. Where is it? That can all be managed now through digital pathology. The reviewing slides, that can go faster. We can sort slides easier, goes faster. And we can think about reports that you can now have easier access to, and also doing everything digitized and maybe even using, the ChatGPT, those kind of things. I'm not really a geek in that, but I think that's something that we can start using as well. So if you look at it, there's a lot of things that you can improve on, and focusing on, for example, the fixation, the tissue processing, the sectioning, controls, all that part, if you focus on that in your pre-analytics, and that was also in, like, where can we speed up in standardization and what should we focus on, a lot of these things I see on the pre-analytics and also in your lab workflow, and where you can use digital pathology. And you think about tissue preparation is not really digital pathology, but you can think of, like, when the sample comes in, start tracking it already in your entire system, right? And I know a lot of you do that, but you can automate that. Then thinking about this one is also, and that's what I mentioned with Lumia, I think that's really great how they developed this sample and how you can use it for prostate samples, because we know with prostate, a lot of tissue is very hard to diagnose, like these long tissue samples on your slides. Now we have it controlled by already putting it controlled in the different pots. And yeah, you can explain it better than I can, but I have people from the mirror here. So what I see happening there is that you can use it in a standardized approach. And with that was also tissue preservation. And with that, you can even get a better diagnosis and more accurate diagnosis. And you reduce waste and you reduce turnaround time. These were results from studies that they have executed. So I think this is a great example what we can do as a community to standardize our ways of working in labs. So I think these results are fantastic. If I was a patient and I would see if I would have like a 53% faster turnaround time, yes, please use digital pathology on me. Please, yes. Also with regards to higher detection rates. Perfect. So this is why I think this could be our path forward, and this is also what I mentioned that I'm doing right now myself with Matt Levitt, with Carl Barrett. So what we're doing is, first of all, and then I'm going to tell you what we're doing, and I expect 19 emails in my inbox tonight. 20. Okay, let me go back. Just telling you what, informing you what we're doing. Thanks. Okay, 10 minutes left. Perfect. So what we want to do is we want to standardize the way of working, and for that we need, of course, a community. So there are a few options that we can do. So often you say, okay, we've seen this in one lab, now we transform everything to one lab. And I think it is possible. Not everything, as mentioned before, not every digital case has it the same workflow and you need different cockpits, but I do think there are ways to standardize. For example, again, the prostate biopsy, the sampling, how that's being done. I do believe that that can happen also with other biopsies. So we can make that happen, and how we do that, we need labs to standardize and validate. For example, we need underserved communities to work with us as well, because they often don't have access to digital or to technology. And if we have those undersourced communities represented also in our data sets, we have the AI being trained on all the different sorts of demographics, but also we're gonna solve health disparity. So that's of course a very great idea and initiative, and I know it will take a long time, so I'm not naive, but it will take a long time to get there. But I do believe that we are gonna make that work if we can do that together. And with that, it's also making it more attractive for an FDA, for example, because think about if we're gonna standardize this. If we can come up with same results over and over again, we can convince an FDA that there are things needed to standardize, to optimize, and that you can easier start switching, mixing and matching all these different devices, and with that we can influence policy making. So that's something that we wanna do. We already, we're doing that in the US, but we're also doing it outside the US because we believe there is also data out there. For example, we're now looking in Vietnam, and that's where we work with DDX Foundation, with Open. DDX Foundation is setting up those digital histology centers in undersourced areas here in the U.S., but also outside the U.S., so we're already doing that. Then there's Open. Open is a platform where we educate on digital pathology. And with the education, we make sure that everybody is using the same approach, reporting in the same way, that you have more reliable, accurate data. And then we are also looking into, okay, what are then the tools that we can standardize and use to convince FDAs or any other competent authorities that if we do that, we've validated, how can we do that, then we can influence the policy making. So with that, we're getting reliable, accurate, diverse data globally. And that will be help us to expand everywhere across the world. So this is then the overall picture that we believe in, is that at a certain point in time when we have this, when we're working on this, the go-to-market time reduces. So that's really interesting, of course, for industry, but also for patients because they're getting earlier access. They're also getting earlier diagnosis. They're getting better treatments. So longevity is better. Thinking about pharma, they now will have better data to develop their drugs, to increase their pipeline, to come up with better mechanism of actions, better targets. And then the government will get more data, getting more information, how to drive general principles, how to come up with general approaches so that interoperability is a solution and that it's not a problem, which it is at the moment. And with that, I would like to thank you, and I'm looking forward to 20 emails tonight. Any questions? Yep.
I just wanted to get your opinion. I went to some of the other meetings we're talking, or some of the other sessions we're talking about AI as a barrier to entry, because we have, so you put up a slide, 10% adoption in the U.S. It's pretty low.
Yeah.
And we have to have a lot more. But they were talking about AI as being a barrier to adoption, because if you don't have widespread utilization already, you know, you have a, it's a nice fancy toy. It's a really shiny, cool thing. Shinier, cooler thing to it, something that they don't really know how to use or are familiar with using to begin with. What's your take on that?
You mean with the digital tools itself, with the whole slide scanners, not knowing how to implement and how to use it?
The addition of AI out of the box, as opposed to just going, let's start with digital,
yeah,
and let's add AI.
Yeah, I think, first of all, we had the opportunity, of course, to use digital already for, as you in 2000, but that was lagging behind. So we don't have that. And I think I see it as an opportunity, but I understand that there might be some discomfort feeling with regards to that, like how should we be using it? I also look back at one of the surveys that I noticed that, are you willing to adopt AI yourself, like at your home situation, right? I'm thinking of, I need to do groceries, so I'm just gonna call out to my ChatGPT by saying, okay, I want to eat something I want to have groceries for the entire week. Can you make recipes? A lot of people are even not comfortable doing that. So I can imagine that doing that for a diagnosis and your own health, it is like a big step. Also for people to use it. So in my opinion, I think data talks. So when we look at all the studies that have been done, everything that has been reported, we see it is accurate, it can be used. We have our quality systems in place at the labs as well by making sure that 10%, most of the time it's 10%, of your cases will have an additional quality check. So I do believe that it's just the discomfort, the feeling that we have to overcome. So be comfortable being uncomfortable. It's my opinion.
Thank you.
Does anybody engage the payers with participation CPT ideas? So we have these distinct CPTs, but if we're going to really encourage development and expediting that, I could see a situation where we drop one code for using digital pathology, a code for using an algorithm, and then another code to share that data in a standardized format.
Right.
And incentivize people. Even though it's a minuscule amount for them in total, the data pool will grow rather quickly.
Yeah.
But right now, there's not a great way to recoup that. But I think that makes sense.
Yeah.
And instead of phasing it, just going all in.
Yeah. Yeah. So to repeat also for the recording is that if we can use digital pathology, if we can split the CPT codes actually more, right? For one, for the digitization itself, and then one for the AI algorithm, one probably for the diagnosis, that sort of things. And I also believe that that would be a solution, because then you incentivize everybody who is involved in the entire chain. I also believe that it can help, because with that we get like a digital code for pathology. At this moment, it's considered an add-on. And I see with the CPT codes right now, it's all based on the old structure. And we need to turn it around. I think we need to even think about adding on an entire new section for digital pathology. And Digital Pathology Association, I know, is working on it. I know CEP is working on it. And DPA and the CAP are working together on that as well. Any other questions? Or all right, I would like to thank you all for listening in and staying awake after lunch.
This concludes the presentation. Please visit the Executive War College website for details on the 2025 event.